This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I was just walking by your room, and you know, I was thinking, boy, it's been a long time since we've had the little father-son chat.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I bought some magazines. Do you want to just flip to the center section? Well, this is the female form.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
This is Hustler, and this is a much more exotic magazine. Look at the expression on her face. You see that? See what she's doing? She's kind of looking right into your eyes, saying, "Hey, big boy. Hey, how you doing?" You see?
Right. And Brendan Sprague.
Shave is a magazine I'm not too familiar with, but again, if you flip to the center section, well, you see the detail that that they go into in this picture here.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a tropical plant or some underwater thing.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Okay, that was good.
Yeah,
see you at dinner. I'll see you at dinner.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, youtube.com/1080TheFan. It is a Pate State Wednesday. We'll talk with our good friend Josh Pate as we do every Wednesday. Coming up at 7:40, dive into the world of college football. Dirty as your Ducks, number 2 in the JP poll.
Very excited about that. Nobody's given us a chance.
Slimmest of margin underdog against Georgia on neutral field, according to Pate. So we'll talk with him. But really excited because we've got Matt Miller, our good friend from ESPN. We love catching up with him when we can. And he joins us now. He's on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. You know him. He's been covering the NFL draft and NFL dealings in college football for quite some time. He has launched up in popularity, and now he is ESPN's shining star. Good morning, Matt. How are you feeling as a Niner fan today?
It's, you know, mixed bag. It's been, you know, I'm a Royals fan first and foremost, so, like, I rode that high of, like, and I know in Oregon, baseball's not huge for you guys, but, like, I rode such a high of, like, my underdog Royals having a great year, and then as a Niners fan was like, oh, playoffs, probably another Super Bowl. So it's been a humbling it's been a humbling October for me, which I probably needed. I think a lot of your listeners would agree that I probably needed that. So it's good. It's been good for me.
Yeah. You had something interesting. I want to get to some of the matchups. Oregon, Michigan plays this week, and you had some stuff on some potential NFL players there. I got a question on the quarterback for Oregon, but I want to start. You tweeted this yesterday and it caught my attention. Scouts and agents are telling college quarterbacks to not leave school until they've started 2+ years. The NFL doesn't truly develop quarterbacks anymore outside of rare exceptions. Now, this is coming off of the Anthony Richardson. I think they said he's taking a break, even though we all know this is a benching because they want to make the postseason. This just feels like a shifting of blame. Instead of the NFL saying, maybe we're just poorly evaluating these guys and taking them in ridiculous spots in the draft, let's blame other things. What is your read on this, the way the NFL is handling young quarterbacks now who are coming out of college?
Yeah, I had a girlfriend in high school once tell me we were taking a break too, and I never heard from her again. So I you know, like, we'll see what that means. I think it is like there's a lot that goes into it. You know, we can look back 2 years now and say, should Anthony Richardson have been drafted at number 4 overall? Probably not. I certainly didn't have him rated that highly. And then you can look at it and say, were the Indianapolis Colts in a position to draft Anthony Richardson at number 4 overall with the roster they had? And this is something this past year I harped on pretty big about guys like Drake May. I loved Drake May. I didn't think the Patriots were in a position to draft and play a rookie quarterback and expect him to win. Now, you can draft the guy and say, listen, we're going to throw you out there. You're going to learn on the job. You're going to take some lumps. To hell with the record for a year or two, like the Bills did with Josh Allen. But you have to have top-down buy-in on that to where the owner is going to say, we get it. This dude played 8 games in college. He's got to go out there and play in the NFL. He's got to take his bruises, and we're going to get through it for a couple of years. Jim Irsay is not that type of owner. I mean, he fires somebody just at a whim, and then he'll hire his buddies. And, like, that's not the structure that you need for a project at quarterback. So I really think, like, listen, I've been covering the NFL for 14 years. I've never seen a quarterback in the NFL tap out. Because they were tired, you know, and I've watched, you know, guys like Matthew Stafford play with broken ribs and Patrick Mahomes play with like a dislocated kneecap. And like, so for Anthony Richardson on third down to tap out is a bad look. And I think you do lose some respect from your locker room and your coaches at that point. But the Colts also have to accept, like, Irsay, Chris Ballard, they have to accept they drafted a project. You knew what you were getting, and now it's like, okay, now you don't like the choice that you made. That's tough.
Well, I think on the other part of that too, Matt, that I think back to April and the conversations we were having, and now I'm wondering, do NFL teams even know what they want? Because I feel like some of the guys in last year's draft class, the criticism was that they were too old, that they had played too much. Like, Bo Nix is 24, 25, and Michael Penix has been around a long time.
Yeah.
We want guys that are 21 or 22, and then you get these situations, and it's like, well, now you're benching him. He's only played 10 games in his career. Like, do NFL teams have any idea what they want and how they're evaluating this?
No. I think some do, you know, but no, they don't. And even, you know, I'm good friends with Brett Veach, the Chiefs GM, and I was good friends with him before he was the GM, when he was, you know, an area guy and, you know, kind of working under Andy scouting. And, you know, if Brett were on here with us today, he would tell you, you know, they liked Patrick Mahomes. They loved the traits. They thought they could be special, but, you know, they didn't know exactly what they were getting. And I think the problem we have now is, because of Mahomes specifically, all these teams are trying to catch lightning in a bottle. They're trying to draft a guy that can then almost learn on the job. And like, Patrick is such a rare example of that. Or, you know, CJ Stroud being great early is a rare example. You know, we're seeing Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams play well this year, but, you know, Jaden played a lot of football in college. Caleb played a lot of football in college. And back to your original question, I apologize, I didn't answer this the first time around. I talk to agents and scouts daily. And last year, when it was middle of January and players are having to decide what they're going to do, I read a pitch deck that an agent had for a quarterback. And it basically said, if you haven't started 25 games in college, NFL teams are knocking you. And that's just where we're at right now, because of this realization that not only is, you know, maybe a GM can survive one bad pick at quarterback, maybe a head coach can survive that, but the player can't. And the loss of draft capital is so valuable now that teams don't want to deal with that, you know? So it's now, I think we're to a point where you're trying to get as much information as humanly possible, which is why Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr. were drafted much higher than we all expected, because, you know, there were more answers to that puzzle because they played 50 games in college.
It's crazy. I was reading a book the other day, Dirt, and it was about Tony Dungy. And when he got to the Colts, do you know what Manning's record was as a starting quarterback when Dungy got there?
Not very good. He was one of the worst rookies of all time.
He was 32-32. So imagine, like, a quarterback getting picked number one, being 32-32, like, what the hot takes would be on him. Just, and that's just some perspective on Peyton Manning. Matt Miller is our guest here, NFL draft scout on Twitter. Does great stuff for ESPN. A kind of a two-parter for you. One, I don't recall, so apologies, Matt. What was your thought on Bo Nix coming into the draft? What have you made of Bo Nix with Sean Payton? And to kind of pair that with it, Michigan-Oregon play this weekend. Dylan Gabriel reportedly went to Oregon because he didn't like his draft stock. He's playing really well. He's the Vegas favorite for the Heisman. I know he's a shorter quarterback, but what's the read from Dylan Gabriel as we look at some NFL draft stock with his numbers, the Willstein offense, and how you felt about Bo Nix going into the draft?
Yeah, I have Bo Nix as an early round two player. I gave him a grade of an 89, which is basically like you should be drafted pick 33 to 40. He went a lot earlier than that, but my player comp for him was Dak Prescott. You know, good mobility, accurate, maybe doesn't have elite arm strength, but can drive the ball really well. I loved the leadership, the experience, and thought because of that, he was going to be ready to play a lot earlier than, you know, some of the other guys, just because, you know, he had 61 starts in college. You know, that experience factor is huge. And I think that plays in well to what Dylan Gabriel's doing. You know, not to toot my own horn here, but I did pick him to win the Heisman back in July. So I'm very happy to
see
that, even though they kind of started slowly, I'm very happy to see where he's at right now. I think the biggest thing for him will be, you know, you almost look at the NFL and how many schemes does he fit in, and then you kind of cut there, right? So there might be 8 or 9 of 32 that say, man, we could make a guy like this work. I look at a team like the Rams who have, it seems like every year they take a day 3 quarterback that they believe they can develop or find a use for. I think he fits something like that well. So that would be like the Rams, you know, the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Teams that are kind of running that McVay system would be a really good fit for him to come in and acclimate, you know, be a QB2 for a really long time. I always tell people, Chase Daniel made a hell of a lot of money in the NFL, and he started like 10 games. And that dude is on TV now, and he's a millionaire. And anytime he comes back to Missouri, he doesn't buy his own beer. You know, it's like sometimes it's okay to be a QB2 in the NFL for 15 years and then hop on TV because you're going to be loaded, your body's going to feel pretty good, and you're set up for your second career. And I think Dylan could be that type of guy, especially, you know, with the mobility he brings to the table, the leadership, the experience, and he throws a beautiful deep ball. And so you think about your resume as a prospect, that's his resume. You know, he's a winner, he's a leader, he's an athlete, and he has a great deep ball.
Well, I think going from that, Matt, to looking at the rest of the class and back to the original questions we were asking about evaluating quarterbacks, like, I don't even know how to view these guys. Like, Carson Beck came in maybe as the number one guy in the biggest game that they've had, or two biggest games. He has not looked great. He was really bad against Texas. They won in spite of him. Quinn Ewers, another guy near the top of the list. He got benched in that game against Georgia. Shedeur Sanders is having an unbelievable year. Like, so, do we know teams are going to be desperate? These guys are going to be high draft picks. How are we evaluating them, and how do you think NFL teams are viewing this quarterback class right now?
I think there are two that they feel good about, and that's Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. But with Shedeur, you have the question of where is Coach Prime going to let him go? You know, he has said he's going to be protective of where his guys go. And so if you're the Carolina Panthers, you could probably save your trip to Boulder, Colorado to scout Shedeur Sanders. It is, I think, the message that he's putting out. Cam Ward has been fantastic this year as a, you know, playmaker, as a point guard, now that he has some talent around him. And I know you guys have seen him up close and personal. So he's played well. I think the names that you mentioned that were like the dudes headed into the year, we thought Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers would take the step. They haven't. You know, Carson Beck had 3 straight games with multiple interceptions. He has not looked accurate. He's been erratic. Quinn Ewers, he's good for like 1 really dumb throw a game, basically. This past week, he had 2 tipped balls get picked. Can't put all that on him. But, you know, there are times where he looks so good and so dialed in. But then you do, you know, you do have the Georgia game where I thought his offensive line played terribly, and that's an offensive line that has, you know, 3 guys that might be first round picks someday. So it was just, I think Georgia just had their number. The two guys that intrigued me that probably shouldn't come out, back to our original conversation, Garrett Nussmeier, first year starter at LSU, has looked good except for the second half last week, and then Drew Aylor at Penn State, who was, you know, 5-star prospect coming out. Last year, he kind of played timid, didn't want to take a lot of chances. This year, he's opened up his game more, and, you know, he has effortless arm strength, but, you know, he's still a little bit I'm a timid attacker at times, I guess you would say. But those are the two guys whose tape kind of excites me, but I also hope that they go back to school because they just need more time to develop.
Matt, you got 4 players. You released your top 50 prospects of 2025's draft class. I went through it, and you have 4 players from Michigan. 3 of those 4 are on defense in your top 31. And I'm just kind of curious, not that one game dictates everything that teams do. Oregon goes to Michigan. Oregon is the number 1 team in the country for now. They look the part right now. How big a weekend like this is for prospects from Michigan? We know Michigan is limited offensively, and 3 of these 4, again, are on defense. But that Oregon offense is potent, powerful. I'm just curious how big a weekend it is for some of these Michigan prospects that Oregon is going against.
Oh, it's huge. You know, and like you said, you know, for the Oregon offensive line, you've got some really good players there. You know, Connerly, Cornelius. And then for Michigan, it's the strength is the defense. Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant are 2 players in that top 50, top 31. I should have had Josiah Stewart in there as well, honestly. I was just a little bit behind on tape study when I had to hand that in. So they're, you know, powerful defensive end, number 0. I would put him in that mix as well. I haven't checked the injury report. I don't know if we're going to see Will Johnson this weekend, but he's the best corner in the country. So that's, you know, a great matchup against the speed that Oregon has at wide receiver. So it's going to be interesting to see. This is what you want as a scout. And this is, like, everyone complained about realignment. I absolutely love it because every Saturday we're getting best on best. You know, we've talked about Texas versus Georgia, you know, Michigan against Oregon. We've got Penn State, Ohio, and Penn State, Ohio State would already been there, but like every Saturday there's these great matchups and it feels like a lot of them are ones we wouldn't have had. So I think for these Oregon guys, this is a statement game. It's a resume weekend where, you know, if you're Josh Connerly and you had kind of a quiet year, there's not a true number one offensive tackle in this class. It's a big, big chance for him. If he shuts down Josiah Stewart, that stock goes up. You know, Medford, the guard, if he could shut down Graham and Grant, that stock's going to go up. And for a guy like Terrence Ferguson, tight end at Oregon, this is a huge weekend because if he can make plays against the middle of that Michigan defense, that could really elevate him in a tight end class where the number one tight end, Colston Loveland, is going to be on the other side of the field. So if you're a scout for a team that needs a tight end, like, that's the game this week because you got one, maybe one, two on the same field.
I want to ask you a prospects question about Oregon as our last question, but I need to sneak in there. What is your dog's name? Because he's making an appearance in the interview.
I have two, and my grocery delivery just came. So I have Waylon. Is a French bulldog who's he's a guard dog, even though he's 20 pounds. And Scout is a golden doodle who is the most scared dog in the world. So,
but he's the one barking, right?
It's a good combo.
I am two floors above him right now. That is a French bulldog barking at the door. So.
Powerful.
Good names. Last one for you. The top three prospects of this Oregon team. We asked about Gabriel, but what are the top three prospects that you hear about from Oregon on this year's team?
Yeah, Derek Harmon has played himself into that mix as well. Defensive tackle, he might be the top Oregon prospect. I think Josh Connerly, you know, he was a top 50 recruit coming out, added some power. I mentioned it's been kind of a quieter season for him so far. I think this is a week that he can really put a stamp on it. After that, man, it's kind of a toss-up between Ferguson at tight end, Evan Stewart, and Jordan Birch. Like, and I know, like, those are all, they're all right there together, you know. So I would probably say, I'll take Ferguson just because I think he's being slept on right now. Maybe not in the Pacific Northwest, but he definitely is being nationally. But it's a good Oregon crop. Might not have right now a slam dunk first rounder, but a lot of like round two, round three players.
Yeah, good stuff. Matt Miller, we'll let you get your groceries, man. Good stuff on ESPN. We love it. We can get you on. Hopefully we can catch up with you in a couple weeks and touch back on the Ducks and other prospects in the 25 class. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
All right, there we go. Matt Miller, ESPN.
This quarterback class, I mean, to the whole point of young quarterbacks and how we're handling them, you feel good about drafting any of these guys? Like, if your NFL team needs a quarterback and you got a top five pick, how you feeling?
There's a couple that I'd feel better than others with. Let's talk about this. Richardson gets benched. Bryce Young has been benched. It's fascinating what the NFL is doing with quarterbacks now. Let's talk about that next on The Fan.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, good stuff from Matt Miller. I know we have one Duck fan that's like, he said Bedford. Yeah, he also called Drew Aller Drew Alar. He's not a beat writer, national college football pundit. He's a draft scout. So
no, I think he throws on all 22 and he watches individual players and individual matchups. And that's how he analyzes college football.
Yeah, and you know, he said Bedford. Okay. He also told you that Connerly and Harmon are the two best prospects and Ferguson's probably third. I don't think Duck fan would disagree with that take.
It's a big week for Connerly for his NFL draft prospects. Michigan, I don't think, is a very good team, primarily because of their offense, but their defensive line is still chalked with some of the best players in the country and guys that will be first-round draft picks, and so it's a good matchup for him.
Of the four players in his top 31, one is a tight end, two of those four are defensive linemen, and he added Josiah Stewart late to that list, so there's three defensive linemen. And if, again, I said it, if Michigan's going to hang, it's going to be early disruption, put them in an environment.
And stop the run, put Oregon into a third and long situation and try and win that way.
Now, I had a zigzag and I started the interview with Matt Miller on his quarterback point. The NFL basically saying behind the scenes, like, you need to start 2+ years in college before you come to the NFL. We don't develop guys anymore.
Then why'd you take him with a top 5 pick?
The Colts announced that they're replacing Anthony Richardson with Joe Flacco. They did not say he's a bench. They said it's a break.
Yeah.
They said the same thing about Bryce Young, and he only played because Andy Dalton got in a car accident last week.
Yes.
You and I have talked a little bit about Anthony Richardson. He has not looked very good. I gave you his percentage, a completion percentage, and how it's like all-time bad stuff.
Yep.
I just find it interesting how we're handling NFL quarterbacks. I told you this during the interview. I just read a book, and there's a blurb about Dungy going to the Colts and how he changed everything. Peyton Manning was 32-32 as a starting quarterback in the NFL through 4 years. Like, I don't, or what would that be? 4 or 5 years, whatever it was. He was 32-32. Like, how many quarterbacks exist that are allowed to be 32-32? It's not what the NFL is anymore, and largely it's because of salary cap stuff. I just find the handling of young quarterbacks fascinating, and maybe Richardson can be salvaged here. Certainly pundits were trying to say that yesterday, that they should trade for him. I've also watched him miss very easy throws in clean pockets, but I have numbers about his pocket and what it's looked like as a quarterback. How have you viewed the Anthony Richardson Colts stuff?
I feel like this kid's been absolutely railroaded.
Really?
If there has ever been a quarterback going into the NFL that we knew going in was going to be a project, it was Anthony Richardson. How many years did he start at Florida?
One, right?
One.
Yeah.
So 1 year starter at Florida, and it largely wasn't very good. He had the great Utah game right out of the gate in the opening game. They won.
Largely with his legs.
But it was like, oh my God, this guy's a freak. He's the next Cam Newton. This guy's going to be amazing. And then I think they ended up winning. They were like 7-5, 6-6. Yeah. They weren't very good. He wasn't very good. And they still took him with a top 5 pick. But everybody said this when he came out of college of like, this guy's only started 1 year. He's very raw as a prospect. It's going to take him some time to figure this out. You draft him in the top 5, so you already reached probably to take him there, and then you didn't give him the ability to sit and learn of a guy that maybe should sit and learn. You rush him out there, he runs around a ton, he gets hurt. He has started 10 games in his NFL career. 10.
The tap-out thing, I think, is what really did him in.
I mean, that's fine. I get it. It's not a great look for him. He's also had defensive coordinators who have come out and defended him watching the film. Brian Flores came out this week and was like, dude, did you watch the 4 plays previous to that? He was sprinting all over the field. He was carrying defensive linemen.
I know.
He was breaking sacks. Like, of course, it's a horrible look for him to opt out of a game.
It's a bad look.
You don't bench a guy for that. A franchise quarterback who you use a top 5 pick on, like, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what we expected. You wanted him to be better than this. Unquestionably, 44% completion percentage this year is awful, and it's inexcusable. But again, the guy has started a total of like 20 games in his career as a quarterback, and you expect him to be able to do it at the highest level? I don't know what we're expecting or what we want anymore. I don't think NFL teams have any idea what they're doing.
I don't think they do either. The impatience is crazy. It's like they always say, we don't listen to the media. I didn't hear that. It's like, it almost feels like you guys only listen to the media. Yeah. And because Stephen A. or all these local idiots like us say, oh, that guy looks like a bust.
You got to bench him. You got to get him out. Give us Flacco.
It's almost like they're reacting to that. Now, I've certainly been critical of Richardson. I will acknowledge 10 starts is not enough of a sample size here. Interesting notes from Steven Ruiz of The Ringer. He put a chart together, and it's inaccuracy percentage, receiver error, and on that it means the receiver dropped the ball, the receiver fell down, or just generally, it's the receiver's fault, not the quarterback.
Ball was in a decent spot. He just couldn't make a play.
And hit as thrown. Okay? He put percentages of Richardson's throws, and it's a laundry list of quarterbacks are on this. It's all the starters in the NFL. The most inaccurate is Anthony Richardson. The highest receiver error percentage in the NFL is the Colts. Hmm. And hit as thrown, the highest percentage, hit as he's throwing the ball, Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird combination of he's not accurate, but his receivers kind of suck.
He's not getting a lot of help.
But his offensive line kind of blows as well. Would you care to guess the second highest hit as thrown percentage starting quarterback in the NFL? You could probably guess it.
I'd go Caleb Williams, probably.
Caleb is up there. He's at 1.8%. So Richardson's a 6.8 for context.
Holy hell.
Will Levis is second in this at 3.2.
Yeah.
3.2 is second in this category.
So he's double that.
I don't know. We certainly understand the salary cap structure of this. I thought your question of they said it was a bad thing in the draft that guys were older, but now they're acting like they want the older
now
guy.
Now you want more experience, yeah.
I think the NFL doesn't know what to do here.
Nope.
And I understand salary cap stuff is in play. But I, Swag, everybody listening largely grew up with quarterbacks were kind of given 3-4 years to work through their problems in the NFL. And now the minute they can't do it, and they certainly have guys that don't look the part, they're just abandoned and they're given up on. I don't know if he'll get another chance. It's vague how they phrase this. But it's both a bad look for him to tap out, but I think it's a worse look for the Colts to say it's a project quarterback and we're giving up after 10 starts.
It's going to be even worse if they don't end up making the playoffs, because that's the whole point of doing this. Flacco can get you there. Now imagine you don't make the playoffs and you bench your top five quarterback.
It's not going to be good for sure. Wild stuff out of Indianapolis after having Bryce Young benched earlier this year. We got a Pate State Wednesday coming up at 7:40. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 1080 The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver online at crunch.com. We'll get to Josh Pate here in a matter of moments. Welcome back in. Hope your Wednesday mornings are going great. Next Tuesday, we have quite the confluence of events. There's this thing going down that's called an election. I don't know if you know that.
I told my therapist yesterday, Tuesday's a doozy for work and the country. And she goes, why the country? And I went,
are you serious?
The election. She went,
oh, yeah. Oh, it's the next Tuesday, huh?
I just think she's like a lot of people. It's just
unplugged.
Like so much internet noise and TV noise.
Smart.
It's like, here's my ballot. I'm done. Bye.
It's good. It's good for your mental health. There's no doubt about that. We also get the initial college football playoff rankings, which just well done, college football. That's a great night to debut your first college football playoff poll.
Yeah.
Really smart.
Yeah.
And we got the NFL trade deadline.
Yes, we do.
So you got all three of those things going on.
The Chargers just don't believe in adding any weapon for Herbert, do they?
Nope. Why would we want to do that? Who has been with a clean pocket, the highest graded quarterback in the NFL this year. You know, why would we want to go get him a target that's not
nice
Ladd McConkey? Dude, he's playing great football right now, but
thanks
you know.
The question. Maybe I was right on the Arizona game. Win a game.
Win a game.
How did you lose?
We have started to see the trade market heat up a little bit. Cam Robinson yesterday got dealt from Jacksonville, if you want to know where the Jags are at right now. Franchise tag player, high-quality left tackle. Very rarely do these guys get dealt in the middle of the season, and the Jags are like, yeah, left tackle. Yeah, see you later. Go to Minnesota.
I think largely their woes are much deeper than just like, oh, we got a left tackle. I would push back just a smidge. He doesn't grade out as a very high left tackle. He's okay. He's serviceable.
Serviceable.
And what does Minnesota need?
The left tackle.
They just need a left tackle.
Need a body up there, man.
So maybe the thinking is Cam Robinson, once highly thought of, go to Minnesota, little rejuvenation in the career. Hey, I'm on a winner now. I can do this. We can win a Super Bowl. You just need to shore up the left side of that offensive line, given what's happened with them at that depth. Good move for the Vikings. A good move for the Vikings. Jacksonville needs to unload everything. The coach.
Yeah.
I saw, our guy John Shipley covers the Jags in Jacksonville. I kind of disagreed with him. People were basically like, well, good luck to the Jags. You've given Lawrence this contract. And I know he had a good game this weekend, but it's few and far between right now. And so there was this debate of like, do you cut bait with a high pick that's not producing the way that Carolina Indy have, even though we just talked about if it's not enough starts, or do you just pay the guy? And he seemed to think that like paying Trevor Lawrence was the smartest move in the world. I don't know. I don't know about that. Had you not paid him and let the season play out, would you pay him? next
That's
summer
a tough
if this
part.
Is what his season is going to be.
That's the tough part, right, is if you wait, if he ends up having a great year, it costs you more money if you wait, and if you don't, if he has a bad year, then maybe you end up saving yourself some money, but it's always a gamble down there. I'm with you. I think they need a complete restart. We also had Deontay Johnson get dealt yesterday from Carolina. He ended up going to Baltimore. They're basically paying the rest of his salary. I was shocked at that. I mean, he's not an elite wide receiver. He's not a number one guy, but a guy that can provide depth to the point earlier on the Chargers, not going and just getting another body for the outside. All right, maybe he could help, but the Ravens added another weapon. And so we got a few names that got dealt yesterday. Are we expecting fireworks next Tuesday? We think we're going to have a firework trade deadline?
I don't think we're going to have fireworks. No. I think you get some offloading from some teams that know they're not very good or they're bad. I just kind of have questions about teams that are competing or in the playoffs right now. I'm going to keep throwing it out, and we talk about them a little more than maybe we should because of the local prospect, but the Chargers not choosing to do anything for Justin Herbert is a wild decision to me.
Yep.
You don't have to go get the biggest name. You don't got to go commit the most money. There have been,
there have been wide receivers on the market.
He couldn't have used Amari Cooper. Yep. Don't give me the woe is me contract money thing. Kansas City went and got DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, it took, a third round pick to go get Amari Cooper.
You know, Adams probably always wanted to play with Rodgers and be in New York. Okay, maybe that wasn't. I just, to not add anything, it seems like that would be a massive mistake for the Chargers.
Tend to agree with you there, Bob. So we got some NFL trades going down yesterday. Stephon Diggs out for the year. Nice little newsy NFL day on a Tuesday. And the trade deadline is next Tuesday. Let's get to Josh Pate, the commissioner of college football, our Pate State Wednesdays. That is right around the corner on 1080 The Fam. All right, it is a Pate State Wednesday. Welcome back in. Hope your mornings are off to a great start. And we need to have a quick moment of silence for our guy, Josh Pate, because he has spent all morning on social media, it appears, having to respond to people who still don't understand what the difference between a ranking and a poll is.
Well, he hates my team.
And
I mean,
fan bases everywhere think he hates my team. He's against my team. Josh Pate, his college football show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time, live on YouTube, at Josh Pate, CFB. Go give him a follow there. Good morning, Josh. How tiring does that get?
Does that answer your question? I think you're picking up what I'm putting down. Yeah. Look, I try and do a public service. And here's the thing. I do it for free. I don't even charge people for this kind of content. And all I get back is, hey, bro, why is Boise not in the top 10? Well, bro, they're not in the top 10, respectfully, because there are more than 10 teams that would be favored against them. Well, what does that matter? Well, it matters to me based on what I'm putting out. Yeah, but are you saying that games don't matter? I'm not saying that at all. Well, why don't you reward people winning? I would if I were ranking teams. Well, then why don't you? Because this is not a ranking. Boom. Head explodes. Mess everywhere.
Can we be honest here? Because I think anybody that does any job like you do or we do this all the time, I think. I do this in my car. You just did something that I think you do in your apartment almost on a daily basis, that is having an interaction with somebody that tweets you something stupid, but you don't actually publicly go at them. You just do it internally to help yourself. Am I correct there?
It's tough. It's tough. And if you're in an apartment or I'm in a hotel right now, I say it out loud, and I know just the law of averages. At some point, someone is walking down the hallway past the door, and they hear it, and I can't even imagine. That's the real content that it's a blessing to get for free. Stand outside someone's door and listen to them do mock takes on a Twitter troll that is probably a 9-year-old kid home from school faking being sick that day.
Damn it, Josh! Yeah, if it makes you feel any better, I had one time I was driving into work to do the show, and I missed my exit because I was arguing with myself in the car driving in, and I looked up and I thought, wait a minute, I'm heading in the wrong direction now. I need to turn around.
At least doing it in the car at least looks like you're on the phone
with
somebody.
Yeah, I'm talking, you can kind of pretend you're actually
like
communicating with somebody.
Like, that guy's by himself
there. He's talking to himself right now. How did we feel? How did G5 Josh feel on Friday? What's the review in from UNLV and being in Las Vegas? Boise State gets a big win. Yeah. Not great for Gentry in terms of his Heisman candidacy, but a not great game for him. It's 130 yards. What did G5 Josh think?
I felt like I was at home. I felt welcomed. I also think it was a really good game. I almost hate that it started as late as it did because I know my people on the East Coast did stay up. I know them, if I know them like I think I do. But I thought UNLV did as good a job as you could of slowing down Genty. I went over to the facility and sat down with the coaching staff for a little while that morning, and Barry Odom just kind of said, yeah, I'm not even going to sit here and say we're going to shut him down or try to shut him down because no one's going to do that. What we're going to try and do is just maybe limit him. We don't want him to get three runs of 40 plus yards. And they did a really good job against him.
Yeah.
But Boise did a good job. Man, they got the ball at 8 minutes to go and never gave it back. And they shut that thing out. And it was a really hard fought game, really entertaining. And you're probably looking at that game happening again in Boise in the conference title game.
I'm curious what Meemaw thinks of Vegas. What were her thoughts on Vegas?
Well, here's the funny thing. So I let people know I was going out there, and immediately, just with the size of our audience, like three or four people reached out and said, hey, I work at this casino. I work at that casino. What do you need? So I ended up staying for free. But the thing about gambling is I never do it for fun. It's never made sense to me. I'm very weird that way. I had to bet sports to pay my tuition the first few years of my college, and I hated it. I did not want to be in that position. So I have never found gambling fun. I have never bet money for fun. So walking through a casino is a really weird experience for me, because I look at slot machines, I look at the roulette wheel and the poker tables and what everyone else would be intoxicated by and tempted by. I just turned my nose up at it. I visibly shook my head as I was walking through the casino. And, you know, I know the rule. If they comp you everything, you're supposed to spend some money down there. Not me. Maybe on room service, but you couldn't find me in the casino.
Order a couple of meals. That's all I need. We get Penn State and Ohio State this weekend. You're going to be there. You kind of teased that on Sunday a little bit. I thought for a moment you were going somewhere else. I was like, oh, my God, this could be a shocking announcement from Pate. You kind of gave us the rope-a-dope a little bit, and then you said, no, I'll be at Penn State. We asked you the week of the Oregon and Ohio State game, hey, these are two coaches that desperately need a big win. Is it possible they tie? Because neither can win a big game. At least that's what the internet tells me. We got that kind of on steroids now, where Franklin can't win these games. Ryan Day's had a really tough time against undefeated top five teams. The pressure that's going to exist on each sideline is fascinating. How excited are you to be there? And just your thoughts on that big showdown this weekend.
I'm excited because the pressure's not on me. So I always love that kind of environment. I think you're right in the way you described the whole dynamic. It is a really weird, semi-toxic feeling around Ohio State right now.
Yeah.
You guys saw them up there. You beat them. A really competitive game, hard-fought game. No reason to sell the season down the river or anything like that. But this is Ohio State football, so people freak out, even if there's no reason to freak out. Well, now, left tackle's gone. Backup left tackle was terrible last week, and he's injured, and he may not play this week. And so they're going to go on the road here. They couldn't run the ball against Nebraska. That wasn't a fluke. Nebraska outplayed them and nearly beat them. And that was Ohio State coming out of a bye week, by the way. So I think they're favored by 3.5, mainly because of history. And I say that understanding full well the words that just came out of my mouth. I don't really think there's a massive edge that Ohio State otherwise holds here against Penn State. And even with the backup quarterback potentially having to play for Penn State, normally in your big game, that would spell disaster. I don't really think it does. I think the kid could give him a half-decent chance to win. I'm telling you, man, for the loser of this game, actually, if Penn State loses this game, I almost feel like it may be a little bit of house money situation, where if you're playing with your backup quarterback and a desperate Ohio State beats you 24-20, you know, that's what Penn State has been. They have been a team that's close but can't get over the Ohio State hump. So it would be nothing new. If Ryan Day, coming into this year championship or bust, and having Michigan down, already has two losses before they ever play Michigan, I don't even know how to calibrate the conversation at that point. It would be so surreal, so toxic, so uncomfortable. It's best to avoid that sort of thing, but you can't always do it.
Could you help me with – I got a two-parter for you. Could you help me understand or help us understand? Oregon came in with a lot of noise. They started shaky. They have looked every bit the part since the Boise State game. How much would this rattle Big Ten fan, traditional Big Ten fans, if Oregon is just to steamroll through this conference this year, win a conference title? And the other part would be on Ohio State. I understand left tackle is important here. I was noting going into the Oregon game, and we've talked about this since, I just don't think that their results actually look the way that they've looked in games. I've been stunned with these weapons, how clunky and somewhat off and ineffective it has been in spurts in every one of their games offensively, how surprised you are by the Chip Kelly offense with these weapons and these players, how it's looked thus far.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I think that is. I think they committed themselves to shifting more towards the approach Michigan has taken against them, shifting more towards the approach of let's be a total sledgehammer offensively. It's great to have the weapons out wide, but we've tried that part, and we keep coming up second best. So if we're Ohio State, if we have the personnel to do anything we want to, let's philosophically shift to where we commit to just running the ball down people's throats. Well, they can't. And so it's like you start heading down a dead-end road, or I'm in New York City right now, so this makes more sense. You start speeding down an alleyway, and it's a dead end. Well, the thing about an alleyway is it's not wide enough to where you can turn around. So they've gone down that road, and they can't turn around now. And you don't have the weaponry out wide that you had, but you got good enough weapons, but you don't have necessarily the offensive line or the quarterback to take full advantage of that. But then you also can't lean on your ground game. And so in the aggregate, what you're just trying to do is you're trying to talent your way to 24 points or 27 points, which they can do, and hope for the best. I mean, that's kind of the recipe right now. And what you're hoping to do is you're hoping to figure it out on the fly. You're hoping that somewhere it clicks. If it doesn't, you're screwed eventually anyway. But you're trying to buy yourself time to figure it out. But again, look at the calendar. I mean, by the time we play games this Saturday, it'll be November. Yeah. You're not really figuring much out anymore. You kind of are who you are.
And how much would this blow Big Ten's fans' minds that Oregon comes in if they can just get through this season undefeated and win the conference?
It would be the best thing to happen to the Big Ten, because you're right, it would blow their minds, but it would be a wake-up call. It would be a wake-up call that conference is needed for a while. And if that's what it takes, if it's the new kid on the block coming in and reminding them that we don't have to adjust to you, you need to adjust to us, then good. I watched it happen in the SEC when I was a kid. I was in high school, but when Urban Meyer came to Florida, I remember how Southerners talked. I remember listening to some people in my family who had, you know, lived in the South forever. They said, boy, the SEC is about to teach Urban Meyer a lesson. Well, that's not what happened. I mean, what happened? Nick Saban did the same thing down there. What happened was they reinvented how the SEC operated instead of the other way around. So if it's Dan Lanning that does that at Oregon, then good. Wisconsin will be better for it. Nebraska will be better for it. Michigan State will be better for it. And I'm mentioning those programs for a reason, because it's the second tier of the Big Ten that's really been the difference. That's why they haven't been able to match the SEC. Yeah. They've had a couple of top-line teams any given year, but the second, third levels have been way off, and they are again this year to me.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. Josh Pate is our guest. Josh Pate's College Football Show. You can catch it every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time, live on YouTube, the podcast, wherever you find your podcast, at Josh Pate, CFB on Twitter. Go give him a follow, and you can track him arguing with people who don't watch the show or see that there's a difference between a poll and a ranking and a power rating and all that stuff. But he has to argue, and he's doing the Lord's work for us. You mentioned Oregon. We're talking about them. They go on the road to Michigan this weekend. The game we were all excited for at the start of the year, I think we all look at now and say, hey, good defense, but do you trust the Michigan offense? You brought up the travel. I'm wondering how much you think that's going to loom on the Ducks as the year goes on, and just how much of a trap spot is this for Oregon in Ann Arbor this weekend?
I don't think it's a – I mean, I don't know if it's a trap spot. I don't know how you get caught overlooking a trip to Michigan, even if Michigan's down. If you didn't overlook Purdue, you're not going to overlook this, is the way I'll put it. So there's – I was looking at this game. You mentioned that. I broke it down last night. If Oregon were to actually lose this game, it has to be the external. It has to be the external factors that do it. It has to be the travel that catches them. It has to be the fact that we would, in a gambling mode, we would call them triple due down right now. So they've overachieved against the spread three consecutive games, I think. Just history says college kids don't keep playing at an A level. Eventually you get a C-plus game or a B-minus game out of them. That's normally turnovers. That's normally you just lack of execution. So if that were to happen and Michigan has success caving the interior of the Oregon offensive line, okay, maybe. Man, I have no reason to think any of that's going to happen. I don't think there's any skill in predicting that. So I think Oregon's going to go in there, and I think they'll win by 17, 20, 24 points, something like that. And it would surprise me if they didn't, frankly.
Yeah, I think the recruiting aspect, too. I think Lanning can steamroll teams like this on the recruiting trail. He's going to take that opportunity. You mentioned last night in your JP poll that Georgia's one, Oregon is two, and it's a 1.5-point gap between the two teams on a neutral site field, according to the JP poll. Where would the Ramen Noodle Express put the money?
Oh, man. All right, which matchup? Because the first part broke up there a little bit.
Georgia-Oregon. Georgia-Oregon are separated by a point and a half in the 1-2 JP poll. Where would the Ramen Noodle Express put the money?
I think I would slightly lean towards Oregon right now. And you know what would be fun about that is, even though it would have nothing to do with the particular matchup you mentioned, people would not be able to get over the fact that these two teams met once upon a time and Georgia beat them like 5 million to nothing. It wouldn't matter an ounce. But here's the problem with Georgia. They cannot run the ball consistently. They're in the 90s. Georgia football is in the 90s in rushing offense this year. I also think that while they had a great game against Texas, it was such a discombobulated, like warped game from a predictability standpoint. It gives people a mind virus when I talk about it because it sounds like I'm discounting the win. I'm not. But if we're trying to look into the future, you having a game where four of your six scoring drives start in your opponent's territory don't really tell me a lot about how you'll play in the future. They just tell me you forced some turnovers, played a really good situational ball, and you beat a good team on the road. That's what it tells me. And you played really physical in the process. If you could copy and paste that every week, that would be wonderful. But Georgia doesn't have game changers out wide. Georgia cannot run the ball consistently. Georgia's been banged up on the offensive line. Georgia's been turnover prone at the quarterback position because they can't run the ball effectively. Same problem LSU has right now. And Oregon has been a more consistent team. So right now, I'd favor Oregon in the game.
Fascinating stuff. I'm trying to go with nobody's given us a chance, and you're just blowing
it's
that
not
up
working
in my face,
for you, Pate. Is it?
That's not going to help me much. What was your most memorable Halloween costume as a kid?
I was watching QVC one day, and they had the Halloween mask special on.
Yeah,
trust me, this will be good.
Yeah, where's this and going?
Flex seal. So I was watching one day, and they had, I still remember this for some reason, they had what was called the windblown mask, which is where it looked like someone took the side of someone's face and just yanked it, and that's how they made the mask. That was a good one, but then as I was talking about that one, I also realized I dressed up as a garbage man as a child for Halloween one year.
Yes.
And I had Dodo, who was a church friend of ours, had her custom make me a prisoner's vest and a pant with a stripe down the side that doubled as my Halloween costume. So I would say that.
That's pretty good stuff.
What was your last costume that you actually dressed up in? Because we're interviewing you right now, and I'm wearing a luchador mask.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. And I don't think there's any problem with that. I think that we're in the business where you can just go as yourself at Halloween this time of year and have no problem.
Yeah, no doubt. Josh Pate, he's the commissioner of college football. Catch him every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock live on YouTube at Josh Pate CFB on Twitter. Look forward to seeing suit and tie Josh Pate again this week. Have a great time at Penn State this weekend. Always enjoy it, man. We'll catch up again next week.
All right, I appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Josh Pate, the commissioner of college football.
Nobody's giving us a chance.
Everybody's sleeping on
us. He's taking Oregon to win the Natty.
Everybody's sleeping on us, man. Nobody's giving us a shot. Everybody's doubting.
What's it like to just keep lying to yourself?
Keep doubting, all right? That's all I got to say, all right? We'll cash those checks.
Yeah.
We got a lot to get to. In the final hour of the show, let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the stuff we were just talking. A little college football news and nuggets. We'll get to some NFL notes in the final hour. A little more on the quarterback thought of just how we're going to handle these guys when they come into the NFL. Also, which of the quarterbacks in college right now will get you excited if your NFL team was to draft them, if you have a top five pick? We got a lot to get to. It's a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Spring on 1080 The Fan.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.